After a long and highly anticipated wait, Bucks basketball is back.
Here's a lob up top to Giannis, and Giannis stuffs it down on the alley-oop.
Oh, the Greek freak coming through in crunch time.
And we're getting you set for another run of the Larry O'Brien Trophy. This is Bucks Talk, the season preview show. Now, here's your host, Justin Garcia.
It is the season preview of Bucks Weekly here as we get you set for a new season tomorrow night. Bucks and the 76ers tip off. We do have clarity on that matchup. We'll preview the game and the season opener, this homestand as well, as the Bucks open the season with three straight games at home. So we will get to that throughout the course of these next 2 hours here. We have plenty of time to hear from you as well and get your thoughts on this upcoming season. The move to bring in Damian Lillard, a coaching change, new defense that we've seen, and I think one of the things most people have at the top of their mind, Marjon Beauchamp and Andre Jackson Jr., the play that we've seen from the young guys, AJ Green as well, for that matter. So plenty of time to hear from you over the course of the next 2 hours. Phone number to join us is 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620, the old National Bank Talk and text line. We are also going to hear from quite a few people tonight. We will hear from Ben Golliver of the Washington Post and the GOAT NBA podcast. We will hear from Chad Dewing from Rip City Radio in Portland, somebody that covered Damian Lillard for the past decade and can give us some insights on what to expect from Dame the player and Dame in the community here in Wisconsin, Milwaukee specifically, and Camille Davis of the Technical Foul podcast and one of the new hosts of the Locked On Bucks podcast. Camille Davis will join us at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. So a lot of conversation that'll take place, but a lot of time to hear from you, as I mentioned, your thoughts on anything, on the offseason, on this upcoming season, on this homestand to begin the season, or maybe on the major news that occurred on Monday. I had said time and time again, and I said the same thing 3 years ago as well, I don't think you'll see Giannis sign an extension this year. Monday was the deadline to do it. If you didn't do it by 11:59 Eastern time Monday evening, you would have to wait until the offseason. Giannis even joked about this at Media Day and said it's not about the money. It's about a lot of bleeping money, so I'll sign next year. And it certainly seemed like that was the case. And then as we heard, the bombshell that came on Monday, Giannis's agent and John Horst were meeting in Chicago on Sunday and came to terms on a new 3-year extension that is going to keep Giannis in tow, lining him up essentially with Damian Lillard's time in Milwaukee. So it's a 3-year deal. The first year of that deal replaces the player option that Giannis had next season, and there's a player option at the end of it as well. So this is going to keep Giannis in place through 2026-27, and it gives him the ability to sign two more contracts. I know we have all been bothered by the discourse that's taken place about Giannis this summer. 3 years ago, we went through the same thing as well after the bubble, and it's gotten to be quite annoying for Bucks fans, and I get that. And you've had to hear over and over and over, why did Mark Lazary divest and sell his share in the team? What does Giannis see in terms of the future of this team? Team's getting old. Is Giannis actually going to stay there and deal with, well, the Knicks are going to come running for him. The Mavericks are always interested. The Toronto Raptors have been there. The Miami Heat, they may be loading up for Giannis. And now we know, once again, Giannis proving there is one thing to him. Winning is a big part of it, but there is one thing to him that plays a huge role in what he decides to do year to year. And that's how he was brought up. So Giannis talked about this at media availability yesterday and gave a very, very lengthy but a very, very good answer and gives you some insights into Giannis the person. I'm going to play you that answer. We'll take your thoughts on it afterwards as well. But Giannis asked, look, you could have waited until next year. You would have had your pick of anywhere to go, just as you would have 3 years ago. Could have done anything. You could have played for any team in the league, even teams that don't have the cap space. It's funny how this league works, where you find ways to get cap space. But you could have gone anywhere, and yet, this is multiple times, you have chosen to stay in Milwaukee and play for the Bucks, and not only that, proudly represent that city and community. What is the reason why?
One of my, I don't know, disadvantages, I'll say, that I'm very loyal. Even though you might hurt me or, you know, do something to me, I always like try to forgive you and see the best in you. And when you were there for me in the beginning, I'm there for you for the rest of our lifetime, you know, and for the Milwaukee Bucks organization, they've been there with me since the beginning. They changed my life. They changed my family life. My kids were born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That's what the passport says. You know, my mom is here enjoying her life. My dad spent a couple of years here before he passed away. My brothers went to school here in a private school that, you know, before I came here, I wasn't able to afford in my lifetime. My kids are going to a private school. They've changed my life tremendously. I'm extremely happy. I know the in and outs of the city. The city shows me a lot of love. And also whenever I go out there and have time with my family, they also give me space, which is crazy to me. You know, when they see me on the street, they give me space. They respect who I am as a person, what I've done for the city of Milwaukee. And for that, I can't turn my back. You know, not now, not in the future, not never. And I want to be committed. I want to give back to the city of Milwaukee. We won one championship, but I believe that we can win a second one. And I'm going to try my best. I'm going to do what I always do, try to have fun while playing the game. And I hope I can create another parade in the near future that, you know, 600,000 people with the whole Milwaukee can be out there celebrating, no matter, you know, the color of your skin, white, black, everybody was out there, you know, celebrating something that happened after 50 years. So for me, I cannot take that lightly. I hope that we can do that again.
So it's what Bucks fans have pointed to all along. It's what Giannis has basically told us for the last few years, and he even joked about this at Media Day. Those comments I made in that interview over the summer with the New York Times to Ross Geiger on the 48 Minutes podcast, you know, those are things that I say every year. And in the moment, in real time, it's easy to brush that under the rug and say, well, of course he's going to say that. He's not going to come out and say, yeah, I wasn't too sure. But Giannis has maintained, I say this every year. I tell that to the organization. It's no secret. It's no surprise to them. It's not as though John Horst heard me say that and thought, oh, shoot, we got to work on a package for Damian Lillard, otherwise Giannis is leaving. But that two-minute answer that he gave, it's 2 minutes where if you have somebody that doesn't know anything about Giannis and just says, well, what kind of a guy is he? You play them that. And that is the Giannis that we have known for the last 10-plus years. The loyalty that he has to this organization, to people within the organization. Mention the 48 Minutes podcast. Ross Geiger was somebody that lived with him when he was a rookie moving here from Greece, knew nothing about the culture, nothing about Wisconsin, nothing about America. And this guy taught him how to drive a car, taught him how to go grocery shopping and do some other things. And Giannis has remained in contact with him. He's cited many times his loyalty to John Hammond, the general manager that drafted him. John Horst was a part of that and came up under John Hammond. So he has some loyalty to him as well. But loyalty is important to Giannis. And what we've kind of said all along is, look, I don't think it's naive to suggest Giannis is just different. I know it's a star league, and I know we see players jump from team to team, and I'm not here to say that that's right or wrong, but Giannis is just different. He likes it here. You know, at Media Day, he gave a comment, too, of, look, why Milwaukee? Because I can raise my family here. You heard him say it there, too. I can go out in public. People know who I am, but they give me my space. Think about when he was at the Wisconsin State Fair after the Bucks won a championship. Sure, you'll get people saying, Giannis, can I get a picture? Can I get an autograph? But it's not swarming him and hounding him. It's all of these things that have just added up to, look, I know an outside perspective, you would say, well, that's just naivete. You just think because this guy is a generational talent, comes in, changes things for you, brings you your first championship in 50 years, because of all of that, you just don't want him to leave. But Giannis has essentially told us this all along. I want to stay here. I want to win. So if we can win, I will stay here. I'm not looking for reasons to leave. But at the same time, you got to do your end to make sure I'm making the right choice staying here. We've seen Giannis hold up his own end of the bargain now three times with extensions that he signed. And this organization, time and time again, has done the same. A Drew Holiday trade 3 years ago. Now you bring in Damian Lillard as well. So some of the insights, Giannis the person, and why he felt this is the right move to sign this deal and remain in Milwaukee with the Bucks. 855-616-1620 is the number to join us tonight on this season preview edition of Bucks Weekly. We will get to your thoughts, but when we come back, Bucks play the Philadelphia 76ers tomorrow night at Fiserv Forum. It is a matchup that when the schedule came out, carried a lot more significance. And then a lot of things happened over the summer that changed the outlook of the Eastern Conference. So when we come back, a look at that Eastern Conference and the addition of Damian Lillard, what does it mean for the Bucks? We'll chat with Ben Golliver of the Washington Post after this. You're listening to our season opener show on WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee. Right along here as we continue on the season preview edition of Bucks Weekly, getting you set for tip-off tomorrow night between the Bucks and the 76ers. And to help us take a look at not just that matchup, but really the Eastern Conference as a whole, as I know it's his favorite conference. Your friend and mine, you can read his work on the Washington Post. You can listen to him on the GOAT NBA podcast with Andrew Sharp. He is a friend of the program, Ben Golliver. Ben, I'm going to start with a guy that you know very well, having covered the Portland Trail Blazers in the past. Damian Lillard, obviously the big story here, ending up in Milwaukee. So let's go back about a month ago. Your reaction when you saw not only was Damian Lillard traded, but he went to the Milwaukee Bucks instead of the Miami Heat.
Well, it was a very exciting moment. I mean, everybody was breathing a huge sigh of relief that it was done. You know, being a Portland native, I've had a lot of people who felt like they were just in limbo for like 3 months. And I'm not sure you guys even felt that way. He just landed in your lap. You know, the whole league is sitting around saying, where's Damian Lillard going? And all of a sudden, he's right there on the shores of Lake Michigan. I love the fit from the opening minute. Just, you know, having covered the Blazers for, you know, really the first half of Lillard's career, there's so many personality comparison points between him and Giannis in terms of steadily trying to build out their game, really being family focused, really wanting to, be as undramatic as possible off the court. And that was what was so annoying to a lot of Blazers fans about this trade saga. It was very out of character for Damian Lillard, and he had been there for 11 years and really never said a peep. And you started to hear Giannis kind of rustle the feathers a little bit this summer. I think there was a shared urgency from both those players that maybe they didn't realize that they were, kind of complaining in such a way that it was going to bring them each together. But it certainly worked out that way. And, Lillard seems like he's been, making fast friends with Giannis on the court. Giannis calls him, a little version of me, which, you know, I could see that comment coming a mile away. And I think it's going to make Milwaukee's offense much more interesting. It's going to stretch their depth a little bit, I think. It's going to stretch their perimeter defense as well. It's going to be a new-look Bucks team. But I feel like guys like you and Bucks fans are some of the biggest winners of the offseason because it hadn't gotten completely stale with that previous group. But it was time, you know, maybe for something different. There weren't a lot of clear avenues to really do a big shakeup. A player like Jrue Holiday is typically hard to trade to be able to get back fair value. And here in this case, I think they got back a much better offensive player, a better overall player, and somebody who has a lot of playoff experience, late game shot making experience, the kind of stuff that Milwaukee has really lacked since the title run. So I feel like you should be considered a winner of the offseason. Do you feel like one?
Well, it was an interesting offseason. And I think if we start with Giannis's comments in the New York Times, and then again on that podcast with Ross Geiger, I took those comments as Giannis basically saying, I feel good with this group. I think, and it's debatable, I think we can win a title with these other three guys, and if this is the makeup, but those comments were more of a what's plan B and what's the plan in 2 years? Because we ran it back this year. We can't do that again in 2 years with Drew's age, with Brooke's age, certainly, and with maybe Chris is slowing down. So that's what I took that as. And for the Bucks to be able to pull Damian Lillard for those assets that you mentioned, I mean, it's very similar to how John Horst has done things in the past too, that I think after that that exit in the bubble, which you were there for, everybody started to point to, well, you got to do something with Bledsoe. Jrue Holiday would make a whole lot of sense. But I think Bucks fans thought, I just don't see how the Bucks have the assets. And here they trade George Hill and Bledsoe and bring in Jrue Holiday. And here it's basically the same thing all over again, it feels like.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, lots of parallels between the original Holiday trade and then the Lillard trade. I think when you have a team whose core is composed of really high character, team first type of players, and I look at Giannis, Brooke Lopez, Jrue Holiday, and Chris Middleton, all fitting that statement, right? The risk isn't that team blows up in some spectacular fashion and Kevin Durant's leaving the Golden State Warriors and Kyrie Irving is leaving the Brooklyn Nets. The real peril, if you're a front office, is that you buy into your group of kind of good guys, team-first guys for too long, and instead of blowing up, they just kind of sputter and fade away a little bit. Oh, here's another first-round exit. Oh, here maybe is a second-round exit. And then all of a sudden, you're looking up, and Giannis is saying, well, I need to get back to a team that can really go the distance. And that's how things would change. What I loved about the Lillard trade, it's a big bet, right? And the Jrue Holiday trade, the original one, was a pretty good-sized bet as well. When you're looking at the assets and just, you know, if it doesn't work out, you know, you're gonna be in a tough spot from an asset standpoint, a franchise standpoint. But it was a proactive one, right? Like, they're not sitting around just hoping Giannis is going to be okay. Hey, let's win 50 games again. Maybe Adrian Griffin's better in the playoffs than Bud was. And now you're going to go to the Eastern Conference Finals and Finals. Everything is going to be great. This was the front office, you know, really living up to what I think Giannis was asking for and saying, we're going to go out of our way to get you a huge talent infusion. And I was there when Lillard was playing with LaMarcus Aldridge. And, you know, I was in those media boxes with you in 2020. And even 2019, when Giannis and Chris Middleton are tearing through the league and in some cases tearing through the playoffs too, no disrespect to LaMarcus Aldridge, no disrespect to Chris Middleton. Giannis is the best player Dame's ever played with by a lot. And I think Dame is the best and most talented player that Giannis has ever played with. And the fact that they have so similar personalities and outlooks on life, the fact that Lillard needs his first title and Giannis badly wants a second one. You know, one comment he made this summer that got overlooked, he's like, you can't compare me to Hakeem until I get two titles. I love that mentality from Giannis. It's the kind of thing that very thoughtful basketball minds would put together. And so he wants somebody to help him be that next Hakeem. And maybe the Lillard trade winds up being kind of like the Drexler trade was for the Rockets in the mid-90s, where it kind of helped pushes them over and grab another ring. We'll see. But great proactive move by the front office. And I got to give credit to the Celtics too, being able to be the highest bidder on Holiday when they're not overwhelmed with assets just sitting around, when they have huge contract commitments already made to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, you know, Kristaps Porzingis, to be willing to take on Jrue Holiday with the knowledge they're probably going to extend him on a pretty big number. That's a bold move by them. It sets up this arms race between the two teams. And it's, to me, it's like the leading storyline heading into this NBA season.
I do want to get to that fit and really what we perceive to be the showdown between the Bucks and the Celtics. Dame, certainly the best player that Giannis will have played with, although I think your partner would attest to Marjan Beauchamp has a chance to be a close second there. He's the guy, in jokes aside, that there's a lot riding on, because, you know, for so long, the Bucks, by way of those trades that we referenced, their assets were gone. When they did hold on to the pick, it was in the 25 to 30 range. That year after year after year of doing that, they didn't have a chance to develop any young guys. Dante DiVincenzo was basically it since Malcolm Brogdon. And I'm not suggesting Marshawn Beauchamp, as a lot of Bucks fans are, is going to be an all-star or a starter immediately here. But there are some nice pieces in terms of young guys that the Bucks have developed through the preseason. But Marjon Beauchamp's going to be big, because I think we've kind of tiptoed around this roster is getting very old very quickly here, that it's basically just Giannis, that, you know, Dame is older than him. Chris is in his 30s. Brooke is in his mid 30s. That at some point you kind of have to start to pivot to getting younger too.
Well, so one thing I think that you guys are going to really appreciate about Dame is that he can carry a huge burden. Now, again, I think there's this conversation around him of, oh, he was disgruntled, he was unhappy, he's pushing his way out of Portland. The real narrative there is he gave that organization everything he possibly could have. They just kept hitting a wall. They didn't, you know, they made a lot of trades that were aimed at the future. They weren't building around him, you know, in the quote unquote right way, the same way that Milwaukee's trying to build around Giannis right now. They never swung the big deal and got him, you know, a real talent infusion. And he did not complain really until about the last 6 months of this. He was a good soldier the whole way through. He can take a huge burden on his shoulders, just like Giannis has. And Giannis has been through every stage of the growth cycle with the Bucks. So now you have two guys together with broad shoulders that can take a can manage a big lift. And they can share it together. And I think that that's actually going to reduce the pressure more than a lot of people seem to think right now on some of those supporting cast members, because these guys can combine for 60 a night, every night, as long as they're healthy. They can go out there and do that. And so, you know, taking a step back in terms of if you're the Bucks, I think you got to feel great about where Giannis is in his life cycle. I think you have to actually feel really good about Lillard too. He's had some injury issues these last couple of years, but I tend to agree with him. His game's going to age pretty well. The two guys you have to be concerned about, of course, are Chris and Brooke. That's really where you're going to feel the age. Brooke had an amazing bounce back season last year. I didn't see that coming. Chris, it's just kind of like a who knows deal. And I think when I'm looking at X factors in the Eastern Conference, I look at Porzingis in terms of how he fits in with Brooke, with Boston, because he's such a strange player just in terms of body type and size and skill set. And he's been clashing with star players in the past, and it really hasn't worked out too well, but this seems like a better fit for him in Boston. And then I look at Middleton, because this Dame trade can go as well as it could possibly go, right? You could get a great season from Brooke, Beauchamp, and all these other guys you guys want to hail as like the next rising Bucks generation.
Andre Jackson Jr. too. Don't leave him out.
Well, I actually scouted him in college because he was in the West Regional, and I mean, they had an amazing tournament run. Yeah. I love that kid's game, and I was actually hyping him up back in March, so it was a great landing spot for him in Milwaukee from my standpoint. But look, you're not going to be typically winning finals games with rookies, right? Like, Christian Braun was like the biggest exception to the rule last year for Denver, coming through and playing as well as he did. And that's why I think next to Porzingis, Middleton is the biggest X factor in the entire league this season. What's his body like? Can he shift into that third role? Can he give you good defensive minutes? Most importantly, against Tatum and Brown, because you got to be able to guard those guys if you're going to make the NBA Finals. And that's a lot to ask Chris. We just don't know where his body is. Feels like we've been saying that for 2 years straight now.
All right, we'll step aside for a quick second here. We'll pick things back up with Ben Golliver after this. It's Bucks Weekly, the season preview edition on WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee. It is the season preview edition of Bucks Weekly, continuing here on WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee. We're joined by Ben Golliver of the Washington Post and the GOAT NBA podcast. And Ben, let's get back to Chris Middleton, the guy that we just touched on a little bit. You called him one of the biggest X factors in the NBA. And look, we only saw him one game this preseason, but is it just me? Am I crazy here? Or is this trade to bring in Damian Lillard, does this buy Chris Middleton a little more leeway? In other words, the Bucks can be more cautious with him and take their time. And not only that, you're lowering the ask of what you need from him offensively. Whereas if you kept this group as is, you would tell Chris, look, we need you to be that guy that you were in the 2021 playoffs.
No, it's a great point. And I think that they can win the title this year, and it actually looks totally different for Chris than it did during the title year. Remember, he was playing alpha at times during that playoff run. And I really hated the conversation that popped up at 21 about, is it Chris's team or Giannis's team? It's like, God, can we stop being mouth breathers, guys, and just try for 1 second to give Giannis his credit, right? But there was a lot of big shots, ball in Chris's hand. You have to go create fourth quarter offense. He's hitting these tough twos turnarounds. I think if they win the title this year, his role is going to look a lot more like Mikal Bridges in Phoenix, right? Where he's a clear-cut third option. He's not a full 3-and-D because he's got so much mid-range game that you don't ever want to kind of coach that out of him. But it's much more important, I think, this year for him. His responsibilities are defensively more than offensively, because he will be the third cut or clear-cut third scorer. And there is this is going to be a big gap. You know, I really think Dame's going to come out there and average close to 30. I think Giannis is going to be right around 30. And so for Chris, you might settle in at 15, 16 points a game. We know he could do a lot more than that. And maybe he still will. I mean, maybe they're going to be so electric and they're scoring points at a rate that we haven't seen in the past that he's still getting up close to 20. And if so, you might have three all-stars on the team, right? But I don't think that part is as important for him. Like you said, you could take it slow. You can ease his offensive burden. And you can just make sure that, you know, he can focus, I think, a little bit more attention defensively than he had to during that title run.
There is one clear-cut name that has started to circulate around here, at least prevailingly by Bucks fans.
Guys are getting thirsty. Yeah, who is it?
I'll point out, too, before I tell you the name, that they have a pretty good track record of willing things into existence with Drew Holiday, with PJ Tucker, and now with Dame. But Dorian Finney-Smith has been the guy that you've seen more and more of man, what would it cost for us to get him? And if Brooklyn's somewhere in the low 30s and just decides, let's just keep rebuilding this thing, what would be the cost to get Dorian Finney-Smith? Because on paper, he seems like the perfect fit.
Yeah, well, the tricky part there is Sean Marks is like king of basketball dorks right now, because he's got Bridges, Dorian Finney-Smith, Cam Johnson. He's like collected all the, if Ben Simmons has a good year, he's going to be riding so high with all these guys that, you know, the internet loves. I actually really like Dorian Finney-Smith. This is a hot take, but I made the case that if I was the Mavericks trying to win a title, I would rather have Dorian Finney-Smith than Kyrie Irving if you're just trying to build a winner in terms of who fits better with Luka Doncic. And so, I mean, he would be a perfect low usage, you know, versatile defensive piece around you know, the stars, you know, both Giannis and Dame. I would do that in a heartbeat. And especially if you compare that to the guys you were plugging in last year, whether it was Crowder or Grayson Allen, whoever else you're putting in that spot, man, huge upgrade. And Dorian Finney-Smith could give Tatum some trouble. You know, you're not going to limit Tatum, right? You're not going to like cut him off and hold him to like 12 points a game in the playoffs. You just can't have him going crazy like he did in that 22 playoffs, where he's just putting up 40 points and nobody's guarding him. And now all of a sudden Al Horford's hitting three pointers and the Celtics offense is going red hot and playing above its head. You just have to have somebody who can kind of keep Tatum right around the 20 to 28 range. And if you can do that, you got a good chance.
And Grant Williams just hit another three, carrying over
right
seven of that series too. Those two teams, and the thing is, it was the same conversation last year that we went into the season and said the Bucks and the Celtics are the clear favorites here. It's obviously different this year when you look at what they've both added, so I don't have any hesitations there. But comparing these two teams, and you're in a safe space here, that if you think the green beer drinkers are set up better, you could say that. But when you look at the makeup of these two teams, where do you really see the strength and the advantage between the two?
Well, first of all, I think it's been either one of these two teams in the Eastern Conference Finals for seven straight years. That's awesome, right? It's like we talk about like the rivalries from the 80s, and it's like, oh, it has to be something like the Celtics and the Lakers where they're meeting like whatever four times in the finals. Like, I guess, I mean, if these teams are going this deep, this frequently, and they meet in the Eastern Conference Finals again, this year will be like their fourth meeting, I think, of the last like 8 years in the playoffs. Sounds like a rivalry to me. I think we should stoke all that rivalry talk. And I don't want to hear the previous generation saying, oh, it's not a real rivalry. It's like, well, you know, I bet Jason Tatum looks over at Giannis's MVPs and championship ring and says, oh, I'd like a little piece of that. And I'm sure Giannis has got some pretty, you know, hard feelings from how some of these recent series against the Celtics have gone too. So, I'm all in. Let's make this as big of a rivalry as possible. I think in terms of the rosters and where they're at today, I slightly favor Boston over Milwaukee. The reason why, I think that they have a better five-man group. The big question for them is, can Porzingis close playoff games? Against Milwaukee, when Milwaukee's so big, there's a chance they're going to have to play two bigs. That's going to keep Porzingis on the court, but Boston's going to be able to have really good spacing, even if they play both Horford and Porzingis together. I just think if you take Porzingis off in those scenarios and it's Horford, Tatum, Brown, White, and Holiday, I think that's the best defensive five any team has for the playoffs across the entire league, right? And so that's kind of why I give them the edge. I think for Milwaukee, there's still questions about Middleton, still questions about the fifth guy. What exactly is that best lineup going to look like in the playoffs? But I still have trust in the ageless Brook Lopez. You know, I still have faith in Middleton. I've been fighting the good fight on his behalf for a decade, so I'm not going to give up now. And I think I'm higher on the Giannis-Dame pairing probably than almost anybody, and mostly because I think this is exactly what Dame's been looking for his entire career, to land with a squad that has such a big and physical and long front line that he just never had in Portland to kind of help cover up for his defense. So slight edge to Boston, but I like what I said earlier. I don't think this is going to be settled from a roster standpoint till February. Like, I think there's going to be some changes, some tweaks, and, you know, there could easily be a pickup on one side of this that swings the balance, in my opinion.
Last thing for you here with Ben Golliver. We've spent so much time talking about the Bucks and the Celtics. I think a lot of us right now would be shocked if somebody other than those two teams came out of the Eastern Conference, but who's lurking out there for you? If I told you there's a third team that's going to come on strong, who would you choose?
Only Miami. Miami is the only team, and they're only in out of respect to Spo and Jimmy and Bam and what they've done these last 5 years. No chance for Philly. No chance for Cleveland. They're not a playoff team. No chance for the Knicks. You know, sorry to the Bing Bang Bong guys. Not going to happen. You know, the net result of this summer is that the rich got richer in the East and the gap widened between the top two. And Miami probably feels like the odd team out because they wanted Lillard and didn't get him. But they could also make another trade of consequence by the deadline for sure. And they also have just the defensive grinding mentality and the experience and the core guys. And they have their own closer in Jimmy Butler, where they're going to be a problem for any team they match up with. So I would have them, like, they're probably not going to be the 3 seed. They're probably going to be like the 6 seed again, right? But I think they're the third most likely team to win the East after Boston and Milwaukee.
All right. Read his work in the Washington Post. Listen to him on the GOAT NBA podcast, which he hosts several times a week with Andrew Sharp. Ben Golliver, always good to catch up with you.
You too, man. Take care.
Many thanks, Ben Golliver, for his time. We'll peel the curtain back a little bit. You may think, why did the video disappear and we just see this image of Ben Golliver? I had to tape it with him earlier because he is at the debut of Victor Wembanyama, which we will get to a little bit later on. So we taped and we talked for about 45 minutes. So we are going to podcast the entire interview, just where you can find this entire show as well. So be on the lookout for that. A lengthy, lengthy chat with Ben Golliver, more than you heard there. He mentioned the teams he's not buying into in the Eastern Conference, and it's basically everybody but the Bucks and the Celtics. I think that is what gives you a little bit of pause and hesitation of, you know, the saying about best laid plans. And last year it was the Bucks and the Celtics, the clear-cut two favorites. Look how that turned out. They both lost to the Miami Heat. So it was kind of why earlier in the offseason, earlier this offseason, the Bucks acquired Damian Lillard, and we get to take this victory lap that the Bucks are the clear-cut favorites right now, at least in the Eastern Conference. Then a couple of days pass, and Jrue Holiday is in Boston with the Celtics. And it shifts to, well, actually, the Celtics are the favorite. And I know we talked about this on Bucks Weekly. I talked about it on other shows. It doesn't matter who's perceived as the favorite right now. The Bucks were not the favorites in the Eastern Conference in 2018 when Bud first arrived. We were talking about it would be great if the Bucks could have home court advantage in the first round. Same thing that's happening with the Oklahoma City Thunder now, by the way. The Warriors weren't the title favorites 2 years ago. The Denver Nuggets were not the title favorites. They were a favorite, but they were not the title favorites this past season. It never works that way. These rosters change. One of the things we talked about as well, for how late these moves came, Drew Holiday and Damian Lillard, your teams are not fully assembled. They are in terms of where you were at that point in the offseason. There's not much more you can do, but there is going to be tinkering that's done. And if we've learned one thing about this new CBA, because I think that was the hesitation of, yeah, but it hasn't exactly played out as we thought. Because what was the narrative when we started to see some of the details of the CBA? It was, well, so much for super teams. Damian Lillard and Giannis are on the same team now. Drew Holiday has joined the Home Depot skeleton Kristaps Porzingis and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Bradley Beal ended up in Phoenix. So there's a lot we thought would happen in the CBA that has been the opposite. So we'll take a look at that. And also, one of those teams that we spent a lot of time talking about, they are in action right now. We will give you an update on the Celtics' debut for Drew Holiday. More after this. It is the season preview edition of Bucks Talk on WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee. So we will be joined by Camille Davis, one of the hosts of the Locked On Bucks podcast, and Chad Dewing from 620 Rip City Radio in Portland. He has covered Damian Lillard's entire career, so he will fill us in on not only some of the details of Dame's game, which by now I think we're all aware of, but also Damian Lillard off the court and the person that the Bucks are getting here in the community. So we'll catch up with Chad in about 30 minutes from now. One score that I think has everybody's attention to get you caught up on is tonight is the first big night of the NBA season in terms of volume of games. They are midway through the second quarter. The Boston Celtics look very good, up 11 on the Knicks, 37-26. And our old pal Drew Holiday, 5 points on 2 of 3 shooting, but it has been Kristaps Porzingis, the story so far, 15 points in 11 minutes. We'll take a step out here. We'll wrap up our number one. It's the season preview of Bucks Talk on WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee. Baby, I'm stupid and you're messing with me just for a laugh. But rather my head was in the clouds and stick my teeth in the grass. Coming up in about 5 minutes from now, Camille Davis, one of the hosts of the Locked On Bucks podcast and the Technical Foul podcast, will join us. Share her thoughts on tomorrow's opener. We do know James Harden will not be in Milwaukee, so we'll preview that matchup. And later on in hour number two, Chad Dewing of Rip City Radio in Portland will give us the lowdown on Damian Lillard. Celtics still up 37-28 in the game that has the most eyeballs here in this early slate of games on this second day of the NBA season. But you had the two games last night. No Eastern Conference teams featured in those. 12 games tonight and a lot that packs some intrigue. Obviously, we get to see Drew Holiday and his new team in the Celtics. A all-youth matchup between the Magic and the Houston Rockets. And later on tonight, the debut of Victor Wembanyama when the Spurs host the Dallas Mavericks. So a lot of games to get you caught up on in hour number two. That hour comes your way after this. It's the season preview of Bucks Talk on WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee.
After a long and highly anticipated wait, Bucks basketball is back.
Here's a lob up top. Giannis, and Giannis stuffs it down on the alley-oop.
Oh, the Greek Freak coming through. Crunch time.
And we're getting you set for another run of the Larry O'Brien Trophy. This is Bucks Talk, the season preview show. Now, here's your host, Justin Garcia.
It is hour number two of the season preview edition of Bucks Talk. We caught up with Ben Golliver earlier in the show. We will hear from Chad Dewing of Rip City Radio a little bit later in hour number two here. But joining us now, you can hear her on the Technical Foul podcast and starting next week on the Locked On Bucks podcast. as well. Camille Davis joining us to take a look at this upcoming season. Camille, I guess we'll start with tomorrow's opponent. Scale of 1 to 10, your level of surprise that James Harden will not be on the floor for tomorrow's game? Sixers in town tomorrow evening, first game of the season, and not a total shock what we saw come out of there. I think the big back and forth was, first there was a report that James Harden was in fact going to travel to Milwaukee. Then we saw an update to that report, Chris Haynes, Woj, and Shams all reporting on this. That, oh, wait, not so fast. He's not going to travel. We have asked him to remain back with the team. And we will not see James Harden tomorrow evening. Not a surprise, I think, to a lot of us, as you saw the last 2 weeks or 10 days unfold. And look, I know it's easy to pile on James Harden, and especially after the Harden v. Giannis MVP campaign debate from years ago. James Harden doesn't have a whole lot of fans here. James Harden doesn't have the greatest track record in terms of handling exits from franchises. We should also point out, in the interest of fairness, there is a health issue that's going on with James Harden's mother that is part of why he has been excused from the team, or was away from the team, I should say. For the time being, but this is already dragged into the regular season. And it puts the 76ers in an interesting spot because you still have Joel Embiid in his prime. You still have Tyrese Maxey, who showed you some great signs last year, and a lot of people, and people that used to play with him as well, J.J. Redick the latest, saying, look, I think there's going to be a big step forward from Tyrese Maxey this upcoming season. So you have those two pieces. You have some decent role players around them. But when you look at what the Bucks did and what the Celtics did, they clearly passed you. And I think if you did not have Joel Embiid on your roster, you would probably, and also if Daryl Morey wasn't your general manager or team vice president, I believe Elton Brand is the general manager, but nonetheless, if Daryl Morey wasn't in your front office and he didn't already have Joel Embiid, I think you would look at it and say, well, we're not catching Milwaukee. We're not catching Boston. We should probably pivot. But it puts the Sixers in a precarious spot because now what we were talking about in hour number one, all the chatter about Giannis prior to him signing that extension. What does this mean for Giannis? Well, if things remain as is in Philadelphia, Joel Embiid is going to be the next guy that starts to give that chatter. So that is certainly a situation worth monitoring in Philly. But what we do know is no James Harden for tomorrow's game. Why don't we do this? We're sorting through some technical issues, waiting on our guest here. We'll step aside. When we come back, I promise, Camille Davis from the Technical File and Locked On Bucks podcast will join us. Season preview edition of Bucks Talk on WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee. From the grave, 'cause I still feel alive. It is hopeless. I start to notice. Season preview edition of Bucks Talk as we get you set for the season opener tomorrow night. Bucks welcome the Sixers to town. And again, no James Harden, not a surprise there. And we're good? All right. Well, I've done enough tap dancing for the evening. Joining us now, as I said before, you can hear her on the Technical Foul podcast and the Locked on Bucks podcast. Camille Davis joining us. So, Camille, when you saw the news, I guess news this morning, that James Harden will not be on the floor tomorrow, a scale of 1 to 10, your level of surprise was what?
Not too much, to be completely honest with you, because this offseason has been somewhat of a mess for the 76ers. From the moment that James Harden had his press conference over in China mentioning the fact that Daryl Morey was a liar.
Repeating it several times, too.
Yes, and that he would never play for that franchise ever again. At that point, I knew they were going to be in some type of trouble come this season. And as things have gone along, I mean, we saw how things went with Harden trying to get out of Houston. We saw how things went with him trying to get out of Brooklyn. And now he is in Philly and unhappy once again. And didn't know exactly how it would shake out, but I knew that there would be some form of disarray with this team because of that. So to hear that he's not playing isn't a surprise. It's just kind of like a what in the world is going to continue to happen in Philly.
So we've spent so much time and attention on the Bucks and the Celtics only, and I think we kind of did the same thing last year. But you understand why when you bring in Drew Holiday and Damian Lillard. But what do you make of this Philadelphia team? Because they're clearly not in the same level as the Bucks and the Celtics as currently constructed. And when you look around at, well, James Harden wants to play for the Clippers, I just, look, I don't want to doubt Daryl Morey, but I just don't see what's out there that's going to put them at that same level, which is the difficult part is you got Joel Embiid in his prime. So on the one hand, you do feel like, are we underselling the 76ers, but on the other, we've seen their track record. I just don't know what you bring back that's a fair trade for Harden.
I don't know either. And without Harden, it's really a one-man show. I know they like Tyrese Maxey, and Maxey has flashed. And with the roster that they have and new coach Nick Nurse, I already had some questions around how that might play out, especially since Nick Nurse is known to be somebody who will play his guys heavy minutes throughout the regular season. And we have seen Joel Embiid have some health issues over the past few years. So I was unsure on just a coach-to-roster level how this might look and how this might work. And if you throw in a roster here without James Harden, for as many problems that come with him, he fit very well next to Joel Embiid. He facilitated very well. He's able to take pressure off of Embiid when necessary, even though that now in Philly, he's leaned into more of that facilitator role. We all know that James Harden can put up points quick and in a hurry. And we have seen him, at least last year, start taking a few more shots in the mid-range as well, just to try to do whatever he can to help that offense function. So without Harden, I just don't see Philly as a true contender. They'll be a team that, you know, can make your life difficult on a night-to-night basis. But when it comes down to a seven-game series, I wouldn't put any money on Philly.
You know, one of the other interesting parts of tomorrow's game is it kind of sneaks up on you, is you got Adrian Griffin coaching his first game as the man and head coach. I know he had done some interim stuff with the Raptors when Nick Nurse was out in the past, but this is his first game as the head coach. And it's against Nick Nurse, the guy that he spent a lot of his assistant career under. So you have that to look forward to tomorrow night. We just talked about where Philadelphia ranks in the Eastern Conference or where we think they're going to be now. All the talk around the Bucks and the Celtics, if I told you the one seed or the two seed, one of those top two seeds, it's not going to come from one of those two teams. Who would be the team that you would see as most likely jumping up into that conversation with one of the best regular season records?
That's a great question. I would actually probably say Cleveland, another team that, you know, last year they had a strong regular season. Now, whether that, you know, translates into postseason success is another story. But when just looking at the regular season and racking up wins, I could definitely see it being Cleveland with that lethal backcourt that they have over there. And they also have those bigs behind the guards with Mobley and Allen, who clean up a lot of mess. Now, a problem that they had with Cleveland last year was just trying to find a guy in that third spot, you know, and this offseason, they made some moves to try to fix that. And I just think they're built to have a strong regular season. Now, if the question was around who do I think the best, you know, third best team is in the East, the answer would be a little bit different than who I think might be able to finish in one of those top two seeds.
Final thing that I have for you here, Camille, is we've talked about the Bucks, the Celtics, the 76ers. Looking at this Bucks team, and we've all kind of dreamt about, man, wouldn't it be if we could get Damian Lillard in Milwaukee and the pairing with he and Giannis. Well, now it's finally here. The number of points per game that those two guys are going to average combined is going to be what?
You got two guys who are near 30-point game guys who both had very high usage rates last year, and now they have to work a bit together. So neither will have the ball in their hand as much as they did last year in all likelihood. I would probably put that over-under for their combined points this year at about 50, 52. Somewhere in there feels about right to me.
52, okay. Not the 60 or 60-plus that I think everybody is salivating over as these two guys, as you mentioned, 30-point guys. But I'm going to be curious with that 52 number to see what Giannis's usage is. And I think we've all said, man, Giannis has the ability to have another MVP season, and he does. But I wonder how much of that is going to be on the defensive end. So it sounds like that's what you're leaning towards as well. As I mentioned, you can hear on the Technical Foul podcast and one of the hosts of the Locked On Bucks podcast as well, Camille Davis. Always good to catch up with you, Camille.
You as well. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. That is Camille Davis. When we come back, mention a little bit about Damian Lillard, somebody that covered all of Damian Lillard's career thus far. Gives us the inside scoop on Dame the player and Dame the person off the court. We will catch up with Chad Dewing from Rip City Radio in Portland after this. It's a season preview show of Bucks Talk on WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee. Rolling along here on Bucks Talk, the season preview. Bucks welcome the 76ers to town tomorrow night as they tip off the 56th season of Milwaukee Bucks basketball. We expect Giannis to be on the floor for the Bucks. We know James Harden will not be on the floor for the 76ers. We also expect Damian Lillard to be on the floor for the Bucks for one reason. A big move in the offseason. One of the biggest moves in the NBA in the offseason, and certainly the biggest for the Bucks, was the addition of Damian Lillard, and no one better to join us now to fill us in on Damian Lillard and that experience for the last decade than Chad Dewing from 620 Rip City Radio in Portland. Chad, thanks for joining us today. And I guess we'll start there. What were the last few months like for people in Portland and Blazers fans, knowing Damian Lillard is very likely moving on and just coming to grips with that?
Well, really, it's a period of mourning. Dame is one of the greatest trailblazers, if not the best trailblazer of all time. He was closely connected to the fan base and really made an effort to make Portland his own, and he embraced the local area. And people in Portland love their own. And the fact that he showed love to the area and brought his family there from Oakland and really set up shop was incredible. So to see that things were heading in this direction, and then when he finally made the trade demand, I think people were shocked because they thought he was going to be in Portland for his entire career. And I think the other thing that made it difficult in terms of adjusting to the idea of Dame being moved was, you know, the franchise, their language ever since Joe Cronin took over as general manager, they had talked about building around Dame, trying to make a big move to add pieces to where they could make a championship run with Dame, and it never materialized. And so when he asked for the trade, the majority of fans were very upset because they love Dame. I think there were a few fans who understood that that might have been the right move for the franchise long term because they could get young assets to be able to start a full rebuild. But you know, you're talking about there's three players in franchise history. It's Bill Walton, Clyde Drexler, and Dame. And now one of the all-time greats is gone. So it's difficult for a lot of Blazer fans.
I want to get to the fit in some ways for Dame and Dame the basketball player in just a second. But you mentioned the trade request and everything else. And for the longest time, we all assumed it was going to be Miami. And then
you just started to see things slow down and you started to wonder, well, maybe he'll go elsewhere. Teams like the Raptors and Nets started to check in. I heard about the trade from a notification through Discord of people saying, well, in what world do the Bucks have the package to land Damian Lillard? And I assumed it was just a hypothetical. It wasn't until you saw more messages pour in. So it certainly caught me off guard, and I think a lot of us here as well. But for you, when you heard that news, the reaction that it was Milwaukee and the reaction to the package that he brought back were what?
Well, one, I was just like you, and I think everyone else. Milwaukee was not a team that was discussed, had been rumored, or we even thought was a possibility that Dame could go to. You know, that materialized and came together at the very last moment. So my reaction to where Dame went was like, that's a better fit in Milwaukee, you know, with Giannis and Middleton and the guys he's got around him. So a great fit for Dame. It, on paper, it looks perfect, and he's got a chance to win a championship. But more importantly, compared to Tyler Hero and the meager package of picks that Miami was reportedly offering up, to be able to get back the haul that the Blazers got in that deal, to get multiple picks, to get Jrue Holiday, to wind up with DeAndre Ayton and be in a position to now where they can go out and continue rebuilding the roster and have access to younger assets. I think the Blazers as a franchise in a much better spot. And for Dame, I think the fit in Milwaukee with Giannis is a better fit than the one in Miami. I know why he wanted to go to Miami. He likes the area, respects the coaching staff, Pat Riley. And of course, he's very good friends with Bam and Jimmy Butler, but he's also tight with Giannis. So I don't think Dame expected Milwaukee. I think the Blazers were just willing to be patient and wait to see what they could get elsewhere in the market, and it materialized. I think Miami went into it with the idea that the market for Dame wasn't going to be there. They didn't want to bid against themselves. They made their offer. The Blazers thought it was ridiculous, so they remained patient, and then other teams jumped in at the last moment, and they were able to get the deal done with Milwaukee.
All right, so let's talk about the actual player that the Bucks are getting here, and I think it's funny seeing a lot of the reactions of, yeah, but Dame isn't a two-way player, as if this is news. And also the level of offensive player that he is, the Bucks are betting, look, that offsets the defensive issues that we may incur. Offense has been the problem for the Bucks for the last 5 years. They won a title despite a pretty bad offense, which may be hard to believe when you say, well, they got Giannis, they got Chris Middleton, but the half-court offense was bad for the last 3 years especially. So Dame fixes that. He did go out of his way at Media Day to say, look, I think I'm a much better defensive player than people give me credit for. At the same time, I know I'm not Jrue Holiday. So if the scale is worst defender in the league to Jrue Holiday, where does he fall? Is it somewhere in the middle or even lower than that?
Yeah, it's lower than that. He's not a good defender. Not even close. That's just not his game. And to be honest with you, never really too worried about that, because he's going to give you 30 points a night. And would I rather Dame expend his energy trying to carry the team on offense, which they needed, or take away from the offense, which was desperately needed, and focus more on defense? He is an offensive-minded guard. He is a terrific shooter. He's a clutch player. He can knock down the three. He's great in the pick and roll. He's going to enhance everything offensively. And my whole point with the defense is that, yes, he's not a good defender, not even close to it. But this is where the franchise failed him, from the standpoint that for the majority of his time in Portland, he was next to CJ McCollum, didn't have a legitimate rim protector, did not have good 3-and-D players at the forward spots. And so he didn't have the protection that was around him necessary to run with the smaller backcourt, similar to how Steph Curry has been surrounded by great defenders in Draymond and Klay Thompson and Andre Iguodala and Andrew Bogut, guys who could allow him to be what he is and give him the support defensively. And I think for Dame going to Milwaukee, he's going to have that support in Giannis, in Middleton, in Lopez, guys who can provide the extra defense to allow him to be what he is. And I go back to Dame's first couple of years in the league when the Blazers were very good. They had LaMarcus Aldridge, they had Robin Lopez, they had Wesley Matthews and Nick Batum. No one complained about Dame's defense in the beginning because he was surrounded with the proper roster with guys who could defend multiple spots and provide him with protection. And that's what he's going to have in Milwaukee, is, you know, the right length and the size around him to where, you know, his defensive liability is not going to be a problem, because the Bucks can make up for that. And that's the type of roster you need to have if you're going to have a smaller backcourt like the Blazers had, and they just couldn't get it done.
One more thing before I let you go. So we talked about the actual trade. Joe Cronin was a guy that took so much heat the last few months leading up to that deal. And I think immediately, too, similar to what I said, I thought about the deal initially. I think at first, too, people thought, man, is this just out of spite that he's doing this? I know there was a piece that came out shortly after the trade that was very favorable to Damian Lillard from the player side. But now that more time has passed and you see what the Blazers have gotten back and how they've continued to replenish things and build with a young core now, what's the general perception of Joe Cronin in those parts? And has that changed at all?
Yeah, I think the majority of fans are happy with Cronin's patience, the work, and what he was able to get in return. The big concern going into this whole deal was, you know, the Blazers don't have a true ownership right now. They're run by a trust. With Paul Allen's passing, his sister Jody's in charge of it. And Burt Cold, who is the Trailblazers chair, he was a longtime roommate of Paul Allen. He's the one that's got the majority of power and is, you know, kind of navigating the franchise. The fear was, without, you know, the leadership of Paul Allen at one of the most important crossroads of the franchise, was would they be able to handle the situation? The thought going in to the summer after Dame made the trade request was that the Blazers were going to get duped and really worked over by Pat Riley. And it turned out that the Blazers actually handled the situation well. I think they were offended at the offer the Heat made initially, and they remained patient and got the most in return. So I think, you know, by and large, I think Blazer fans are happy and never going to be fully satisfied knowing that Dame is elsewhere, but that they can watch him make a run for a championship with the Bucks, knowing that the Blazers now in a much better position moving forward to where they can retool the roster because they have more cap flexibility. They've got more trade pieces. They've got a stockpile of draft picks. And before the Dame deal went down, the cupboard was bare in terms of assets. So if you look at the entire package, I think fans are impressed and pleased with the work of Joe Cronin. I think the big issue or rub is the Blazers' motives. You know, they talked about building around Dame and, you know, they're all in with Dame. And they said that for over a year. But every move they made was the exact opposite of that. They went young and they traded away veterans and they brought in more. They wanted to go younger and bring in the assets. So fans wonder if he was really being serious about building around Dame or if the plan from the get-go was to go young and move off of Dame. But, you know, it's in the past now. And I think what they got in return, I think Blazer fans can be happy about. And they appear to be, for the most part, pleased. And now it's a matter of, you know, coaching the young guys and getting them up to speed and seeing where this, you know, new group of players can go. And I'll say this to the Buck fans out there. Dame is a pleasure to cover as someone in our business. He's great with the media. He's open and honest. And for a global superstar, he's got a large dose of humility, which is nice. He's a terrific teammate. He's great in the locker room. And he's very loyal. So, you know, he comes from Oakland. He's loyal to his family, his friends, those who have put trust in him and taken a chance on him. So I know that the Buck fans are going to really enjoy getting a chance to watch him play and the work he'll put in night in and night out. An unselfish player and just a unique in today's NBA with the way he operates and the way he works. So you're going to enjoy him. And for all the Blazer fans, we have someone to cheer for come postseason time. Fear the deer. I think the Bucks have a great shot to win the title, and I'll be pulling for them.
Chad Dewey, you can hear him on 620 Rip City Radio in Portland. Always great to catch up with you. We'll do this again before the Bucks and the Blazers play in the regular season.
That sounds great. That's going to be the hot ticket item in Portland is when Dame makes his return. I appreciate having me on, and enjoy the season. You guys are going to have a fun one.
Yeah, hot ticket item in Portland, and it'll be interesting here, too, relatively early in the season, about a month in, that the Blazers come to Milwaukee on a Sunday. We'll get you caught up in that score in New York as it's getting closer now between the Knicks and the Celtics, and continue to preview the season and tomorrow's matchup with the Sixers after this. It's the season preview of Bucks Talk on WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee.
Money. Here we go. Money talk.
Get on the block, hold on your bets, here's where the buck stops. See, first of all, I'm stepping out on my own. About time I elevated the...
All right, I mentioned it's getting closer in New York, so the season opener for the Celtics is at Madison Square Garden against the New York Knicks, and It's down to 12 now. Celtics look really good. It's one game. You can't overreact. If we caution during the NFL season, don't overreact to 1 week. We already started to see it last night. Ugh, I think Devin Booker's put himself in the MVP conversation. Is anybody going to beat the Nuggets? But this Celtics team thus far looks as good as we assumed they would be. And look, if we just look at the Bucks versus the Celtics, part of you doesn't want to get too far ahead of yourself because, again, the old adage about best laid plans, and I still expect moves to be made throughout the course of the season. James Harden is going to get traded. I think we all assume it's going to be to the Los Angeles Clippers, but the Sixers are going to look different. Celtics are probably going to do something as well. They have a trade exception. They have a lot of draft picks that they can trade. Those are the two big advantages they have over the Bucks. So the Celtics can still do some things. Finding matching salary, though, is where it's going to get different. But you have teams like the Cavaliers, who added some role players over the offseason. The Miami Heat are another team. Keep an eye on. When you see all these guys that they missed out on, what does Tyler Hero look like? We know he's motivated coming into the season, but also, you know, we said keep an eye on what happens with Philly. Keep an eye on what happens with the Cavs, too, with Donovan Mitchell, who also has a big decision to make and has not signed an extension. You could still see some stars on the move, and those are the teams that would seem to make the most sense. But when we look at the Bucks and the Celtics, so if we want to throw all of that logic out the window and say I'm willing to look too far ahead and to set myself up for pain, what the Celtics possess more than any other team in this league is the ability to defend 1 through 4 rather easily. Now, I'm still in the I'll believe it when I see it mode with Kristaps Porzingis, not only defensively, but staying healthy. You would have to assume at some point Al Horford is going to start to regress. But he still gives you the ability to switch and defend multiple positions out there for a big man. They just lost a lot of depth in the front court. And I know they look at it like we can play differently now. We can play Horford and Porzingis together. That's not how they started the game tonight. Al Horford came off the bench. But Robert Williams, I know he missed a lot of time. He was a big piece for them defensively. And it's the Celtics' defense that really took them places. They had more than enough offense. It was the opposite of the Bucks. Bucks had more than enough defense. They didn't have enough offense. And that is what boils down to, for me, the big change and the big difference between these two teams. You can tell me, how are the Celtics going to defend Giannis? And that's why I said they can defend 1 through 4. I'm going to count Giannis as a 5 in this example. How are the Celtics going to defend Giannis? And I don't have an answer for you. I can't sit here and tell you they'll do this or this or this. Robert Williams is gone. That's a body you could throw out there in front of him. Al Horford, we just said, the age issues. When is he going to start to decline and break down? Marcus Smart was the guy that defended Giannis quite a bit last year. He's also gone. Grant Williams took Giannis quite a few reps. He's gone. There just isn't an easy fix or an easy button out there for the Celtics to defend Giannis. I get that. But my counter to you, and why, as I just said, I don't think either of these two rosters are finalized just yet, my counter would be the Celtics could very easily say, well, how are the Bucks going to defend our perimeter? Their best perimeter defender is on our team now, and he's our 4th, some nights 3rd, offensive option. Who's going to take Jason Tatum? Who's going to take Jaylen Brown? Who's going to take Drew Holiday? The Bucks are putting a lot of faith in Malik Beasley. And if it works out, and if Malik Beasley can defend to the level that they think he can, and that, frankly, Adrian Griffin hopes he can. We talked about Chris Middleton being an X factor of sorts. Malik Beasley may be the biggest X factor for the Bucks this season for that reason. You need some perimeter defense. And the thing that concerns you about the Celtics is not just how they can throw bodies out there. They can't defend Giannis. We've established that. We've seen Drew Holiday defend Damian Lillard quite well in the postseason before. They have Derek White. That backcourt, by the way, with Drew Holiday and Derek White, good luck. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are both capable defenders, so they have that defense where the Bucks lack it. And look, it may ultimately boil down to this. The Bucks went a long ways in addressing this with Malik Beasley and with Dame Lillard. But if we talk about Giannis feasting against this defense, which he should on paper, there are going to be some struggles to defend that perimeter offense for the Celtics. And last I checked, 3 points are worth more than two. So I think that is why it's not Milwaukee hatred, but I think that's why you'll see a lot of pundits going with the Boston Celtics. I say that, but interestingly, we saw the opposite from the four-letter network that everybody seems to loathe the most in ESPN's predictions for the season. We'll fill you in on that and do another score check on what's going on around the league. 12 games tonight on this second night of the NBA season, and a couple of rather interesting ones. We'll get you updated on that and run through the predictions after this. It's a season preview edition of Bucks Talk on WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee. All right, so I mentioned the predictions from ESPN, a network that I don't know if I would say despise, but most Bucks fans, especially after the last couple of weeks, don't really feel that great about. You got people printing receipts on Brian Windhorst. But ESPN does their annual, let's gather all of our roving beat reporters and start to pull together their predictions for the upcoming season. So we'll do this conference by conference, and we're going to ask you the simple question. The conference finals, the two teams that play and the result will be what? So, for the Eastern Conference, there were 12 names surveyed. Of those responses, we saw four teams chosen to win the Eastern Conference. 12 people surveyed. They came up with four teams that would win the East. Two teams each got one vote. Bobby Marks, who was the first, by the way, to point out, you know, I know we're all shocked by this Giannis extension news. Here's why he's actually signing it now, that this gives him the ability to sign three contracts because of the over 38 rule. So Bobby Marks is the first to point that out. But Bobby Marks is one of those two people that went off the board. His choice for the Eastern Conference Finals was the New York Knicks beating the Boston Celtics in seven. A matchup we are seeing tonight, by the way, the season opener for both teams. The other of those names, Israel Gutierrez, sideline reporter for ESPN, in Miami, chose the Miami Heat to beat the Bucks in six. Sacrilegious. If the Bucks are going to lose in a conference finals to the Miami Heat of all teams, to suggest that it would happen in six. So there's two of the 12 out of the way. The other 10, ESPN, the place that allegedly hates the Bucks. Six of their remaining 10 beat reporters chose the Bucks to win the conference, beating the Boston Celtics in each of those responses. Jerry Bembry, Bucks over Celtics in six. Jamal Collier, who covers the Bucks as part of his ESPN coverage. He's the Central Division reporter for the Bucks, the Pistons, the Bulls. Jamal Collier chose the Bucks over the Celtics in seven. Andrew Lopez, Bucks over Celtics in seven. Tim McMahon, Bucks over Celtics in seven. Ramona Shelburne, Bucks over Celtics in six. And Andre Snelling's Bucks over Celtics in six. So despite this perceived hatred, and well, they just don't want to look for ways to recognize Milwaukee, a majority of the ESPN beat reporters for the Eastern Conference chose the Bucks to win the East this upcoming season. This is after all those moves. This survey went out earlier this week. And it's the Bucks. If it doesn't come down to the Bucks and the Celtics, you may think, well, something either drastically went wrong or somebody came out of nowhere. It may not necessarily be that. I'll tell you what I mean after this, and we'll get you set for tip-off tomorrow night because, oh, by the way, something we used to do on a weekly basis last year, it is now officially back. We will check the injury report, the first submission for the Bucks this season. We'll take a look at the injury report and wrap up the show after this. It's a season preview edition of Bucks Talk on WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee. The Knicks had it down to one at one point late in the third quarter. It's now 71-66. The Celtics lead the New York Knicks in the season debut for both of those two teams. Also, we'll point out Drew Holiday, 7 points and 3 of 8 shooting in his Celtics debut. First injury report of the season is out, sort of, for the Bucks. They did not submit one. In other words, no players listed on the injury report. For the Sixers, the notable James Harden is listed as out, not with the team, returning to competitive reconditioning. So I mentioned either something goes drastically wrong or someone comes out of nowhere. If it doesn't come down to a Bucks-Celtics conference finals, that may not necessarily be the case because when you look at the over-under totals for the season this upcoming year, it is the first year I can remember where we didn't not only have any 60s or close to that, we didn't have any even fairly high or high mid 50s. A lot of 51, 52 and a half, 53 and a half, right around there. And we point this out because if you have a handful of teams finishing right around each other, it comes down to tiebreakers. The 2 and 3 line is going to remain important if the Celtics finish first or the Bucks finish first. And you have somebody fall off, that's going to change where you match up in that first round. So I do think there's a good chance, second round I should say, there's a good chance we could see a team like the Cavaliers, like even the New York Knicks, that jump up and have a record similar to what we see from either of those two teams and what that may mean for the rest of the standings. Tomorrow night, the season begins. 6:30 tip-off. Bucks host the Sixers. 6 o'clock is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, Bucks talk. After the game, we will take your thoughts for 1 hour on the post-game show. My thanks to everybody for listening on WTMJ and ESPN. We'll talk to you tomorrow night with more Bucks basketball.